All right. So we're learning the Daf Yomi from, I think, 2 days ago. If today is Kuf Chaf Bet. So we're going to be learning Kuf Chaf, mostly Kuf Chaf Amud Bet, but starting from the bottom of Kuf Chaf Amud Aleph. Those of you who have already learned Daf Yomi, those of you who haven't, don't worry, we're going to do it together. Let me make it bigger for everyone. Just 1 second. How's that? That's good. Okay. Here we go. So here we are in the Mishnah on the bottom. All right. So the Gemara says, Rabbi Shimon ben Nanas Omer porsin or al shalgdi al gabe shida teva umigdal shachazban eta ur. So you have or and you have ur. And what the Mishnah says is that according to Rabbi Shimon ben Nanas, if you see a fire that breaks out and let's say a closet or some kind of object in your house has lit on fire, so technically speaking, you're not really supposed to put it out because mechabeh is one of the melachos on Shabbos. Of course, I should just mention, of course, that if it's some kind of danger to life, pikuach nefesh, you should definitely put it out. But the Mishnah is not talking about that. He's talking about a situation where it's not going to cause any danger to life. So you have to be careful not to put it out. But what can you do? Let's say you want to save the rest of the objects in your house or even save that object itself. So what you're allowed to do is you're allowed to spread some skin, spread like leather of a gedi on top of it. Because what's going to happen? So the Mishnah just says, it becomes singed. All right. Now, it's not clear exactly what it means. Obviously, it's going to stop the fire. But what exactly the fact that it's mecharech means, the fact that it gets singed, not exactly clear. Rashi says on the bottom, Veino nisraf, mitoch kachu megina lateva. The fact that it gets singed, Rashi says, is important because you're not causing it to light on fire. In other words, you really shouldn't put something in front of it that's going to light on fire itself, because then you're just creating more fire. So the fact that it's not going to light on fire is of critical importance, although the Gemara discusses exactly why it's important. So that's what Rosh Hashanah says to do. Let's say you have a fire that's starting to get out of control and you want to make sure that it doesn't get out of control. So what should you do? You put things around it that will hopefully stop the fire, contain the fire. You put non-flammable objects around the fire that will protect it, the rest of your house, and make sure that it doesn't spread too much. For example, you put pitchers all around it. So now the Mishnah continues, and Rabbi Yossi offers his own point. Rabbi Yossi says, "Oser b'kli cheres chadashim mele'in mayim." Says you're not allowed to surround it with pitchers filled with water, with new pitchers filled with water. Because what will happen when the fire reaches those pitchers, those earthenware pitchers, the pitchers will basically explode and the water will come pouring out and it will put out the fire in too direct a fashion, according to Rabbi Yossi. Okay? Rashi says, right? You might have noticed that in the Mishnah it says you're not allowed to use kli cheres chadashim. So Rashi is explaining that the reason why chadashim is there is because if the kli cheres is already old and had seen lots of fires already, so then you can trust that it's not going to actually explode. The point of view is that because they're new, they're still a little bit brittle or something, and the fire stands a chance of actually causing it to explode. That's the Mishnah. Okay, so we have Rav Shimon ben Anas, you have the continuation of Rav Shimon ben Anas' din, and then Rabbi Yossi, who seems to disagree. You could very well say that the Tanakhama thinks that you're allowed to use pitchers filled with water. Any questions on the Mishnah? Before we continue, anybody? Any points you want to make? No? All right. By the way, just mention, if anybody can put on their video, it would be great for me, just so that I feel like I'm talking to people. If you can't, if you're in your pajamas, if you're not wearing your makeup, that's fine too. It's okay. All right. So the Gemara says, Amar Rav Yehuda Amar Rav, Talit she'achaz ba ha'or mitzad echad, notnin alea mayim mitzad acher. What happens if your talis is on fire? Ay gevalt. Your talis is sitting on the table and the candle's tipped over, and they set fire to the talis. What are you going to do? So what are you going to do? So he says you can pour.
Does talit mean dafka?
Dafka, like a talit for tefillah? Not
or
necessarily.
Could it just be a beged?
Yeah, it just means a beged. Just means a beged. Nothing special about the talit. So what do? You sprinkle a little bit of water. I'm being medayek here. You sprinkle a little bit of water on one side, on the side that doesn't have the fire on it, because then what happens is that when the fire spreads to that part of the talit, it goes out because of the water. This is, basically in direct contradiction, as we're going to see, to what Rabbi Yossi says. But this is a fascinating language. We're not going to go deeply into it, but what does this mean? Vim kavta kavta. And if it goes out, it goes out. It's a little strange. It sounds like Rocky IV. If he dies, he dies. Like, what do you mean? Vim kavta kavta. He poured water on the talit, presumably to put out the fire. How could the Gemara say, im kavta kavta? How are we supposed to work this out? What do you guys think?
I think it's just another way of saying that this is a mutar way of protecting talit from the fire, or protecting the fire from spreading.
Okay, could be.
It means that it's not necessarily going to go out. So if it goes out, it goes out. But there isn't an intention here for it to go out.
There is no intention for it to go out?
There is a possible intention, but because it's not 100%, then it's not a situation.
What's your intention if not to put out the fire?
That's no certainty.
Okay, no certainty is different than there's no intention. So no certainty is different than...
You can't call it a psik resha.
Okay, so you're saying it's not a psik resha. You're saying it's not a psik resha because it's not for sure going to... Ah, but Simon, wait a second. You want to call it a davar she'eino mitkaven, that means you're assuming that he's not mitkaven.
They're definitely mitkaven.
Well, that's the problem, isn't it? Psik resha, saying it's not a psik resha is only meaningful if what you mean to say is it won't for sure happen and I don't intend for it to happen. But it can't be a davar she'eino mitkaven if you intend for it to happen. So that's why we have to look at Tosfot at the top. I didn't show it to you. I hid him from you. All right. Notein mayim mitzad zeh. Tosfot says, Pirish Rashbam. This is Rashi's grandson. Actually, I don't know if
it's
Rashi's
showing
grandson.
It to us?
It could be somebody else. Now I'm showing it to you. Can you not see it? Notein mayim mitzad zeh.
Not yet.
Now we can.
I scrolled up. Pirish Rashbam. Lav davka al hatalit. Daha kaimelan beperek damachata de bebeged shriyato zeo kibuso. Ulel besof perek shimona shotzim pirashti. So basically, the Rashbam says you're not actually pouring it directly on the talit. Now, he's saying you're not pouring it directly on the talit for a funny reason. He says because you're not allowed to pour water on a talit. In fact, you're not allowed to pour water on any beged on Shabbat. Why not? Because it's considered laundering. It's kibbutz. It's kibbutz. Yeah. Shriyato zeu kibbutzo. So there are a couple options over here. One is that the talit wasn't dirty. That's what Tosfot elsewhere says. We're not sure that we rely on that. That it's not dirty, or that you only poured a tiny bit of water on it, or that your intention was to do something else. You were pouring it, this is what Tosfos says over here, you're pouring it somewhere else. Like, let's say you're washing your hands and you happen to do it over the talit, right? In other words, you pulled some kind of trick like that. Okay, getting back to the Gemara, kavta kavta. I went back down. I don't know if you guys saw. So the next word...
I did, but I'm not clear of your answer regarding kavta kavta. Is it the davar she'eino mitkaven?
No, we're going to get back to it.
What was the intention?
Good, so that's what we're going to get. We're going to have to get back to it. Meitive. What kind of question is a meitive? Always have to ask.
Challenge.
Challenge from a higher source.
One level up.
Yeah, challenge from a higher source. So we're challenging Rav. Rav is an Amora, Rav Yehuda Amarav is an Amora, and we're challenging him based on I assume it's a Mishnah, the little Chet, if I go up, sorry to make you guys dizzy, it's a Tosefta. Okay, Tosefta means that it's like a Breita, it's just not actually in the Gemara. It's not actually recorded in the same way. Fine. Meitivei, Talit Shachaz Ba Ha'or, Mitzad Echad, Poshta umitkaseba. This is an amazing Tosefta. It says, what should you do if you have a talit that's on fire? What should you do?
You put it on yourself.
Unroll it and put it on.
And it will extinguish the flame. And by the way, it's not referring to a talis. It's referring to just like a big garment.
Whatever the garment is. Unroll it and you put it on. Now, is putting it on going to put out the fire? No, it's the unrolling part that's supposed to put out the fire. When you spread it out and you give less, I guess, material for the fire to consume, so that's supposed to actually put it out. But why is it critical that it says umit kaseba? Because that's the conceit, right? That's what you're doing in order to. That's what you're doing in order to be able to claim afterwards. Oh, I'm not mitkaven, right? Oh, I saw this piece of clothing on fire. I'm going to unroll it and put it on. Oh, the fire went out. Okay, that was just a side point. When really, that's probably your actual intention. And then it continues. Another case. Sefer Torah she'achaz bo ha'or, chas v'shalom, a Sefer Torah should catch fire. What should you do? Poshto v'karebo, you unroll it and you start reading. V'im kava, kava. And if it goes out, it goes out. Very nice. Same story. So the Gemara says, let me make this bigger as well.
Rav Dani.
Yes.
Is this mitasek or dover shalom is kaven?
Is it mitasek or dover shalom is kaven? That's a good question. I could see why you would think that it's mitasek. But it doesn't seem like it's mitasek. Mitasek means you're completely unaware of what's going on. I don't think it's mitasek. Unless it's a funny kind of mitasek where you are aware of what's going on, but you're still allowed to do it. It appears to be a davar sheino mitkaven of some kind. Although grama certainly comes into the picture over here. We have to keep that in mind at some point. We're not talking about it right now, but we have to keep that in mind. So,
why do you need an excuse to take off a burning piece of cloth?
No, you're not taking it off. You're putting it on. The clothing is on the table. It was lit on fire. Say again, Pinchas?
First, poshta. He takes it off first.
No, poshta means to unfold in this case. It just means to, you're pochet. You just unfold. I know it sounds like you're taking it off, but the way that it's understood is that you're unfolding it, and then mitkaseba, and then you're putting
it on. You have to go the whole hog? Do you have to go the whole hog to be patur? Do you have to put it on?
To actually put it on?
Yeah.
Meaning what happens if you don't put it on?
What happens if it's still burning? Yeah, I mean, so it has to be your intention in order to...
So what appears to be going on, though, over here is that it's not just that it's not your intention, but it's also that it's indirect. In other words, spreading it out, you're not actually extinguishing the fire by doing that. You're just creating more surface area, which will hopefully put out the fire. And that's grama. That's an indirect way of doing it. And that's kind of... part of what makes it mutar, not just the davar sheino mitkaven aspect to it. Now, what's the meitiveh over here? Where's the meitiveh? So the meitiveh is, let me go back to the first daf, one second. The meitiveh is that Rav Yehuda says that you're allowed to put water on it, which is a relatively direct way of doing it, right? You're actually putting water, the water is going to put out the fire. But the Tosefta only allows you to spread out the talit. It doesn't say that you're allowed to put water on it. So that's supposed to be the meitiveh. So the Gemara says, the answer that Rav is going to give is, Rav says, that's very nice that you have a tosefta. If you had a tosefta and I had nothing to back me up, I would lose. But I do have something to back me up. What do I have to back me up? Our Mishnah. Hu da'amek Rabbi Shimon ben Anas. He says, like Rabbi Shimon ben Anas, that's our Mishnah. Rashi says, Dishari liikuve dleka ba'or gdi. Because what did the Mishnah say? Rabbi Shimon ben Anas said, you're allowed to put something, an object, that once the fire gets there, it's going to stop the fire. It is functionally the same as the water that you sprinkle on the other end of the talit. It's true, water puts out fire very nicely, but functionally, the or gdi and the water are pretty much the same. And so Rav claims, Rabbi Shimon ben Anas is my Tana. So I'm protected. So the Gemara doesn't let him go, let him off the hook so easily. Amar da Amar Rabbi Shimon ben Anas mibnei shehu mecharech gram kibui mi Amar. So the Gemara says, no, the reason why Rabbi Shimon ben Anas says what he says is because it's mecharech. Now, again, what does mecharech mean? It means that it singes. So what does that mean? It singes the garment, becomes burnt, and then kind of like extinguishes itself. In other words, it spends itself, the fire. It hits something, and then the fire runs out of koach. But that's different than water, which The Gemara says, "Ki haigav nakshemagim lamayim hu kava." Water extinguishes fire. So interesting. The Gemara seems to say that there's a distinction between, you know, making the fire unable to continue to burn versus splashing water on the fire and putting it out. Now, both of these cases are actually gram. They're both grama. They're both indirect because you're not pouring the water directly on the fire. You're pouring the water at the end of the talit. But they are different in the sense that the water actually puts out the fire, whereas the or hagdi just stops it. So gram kibui is the problem over here. Gram kibui is when you put water, you know, at the end of the line with the fire, and then the water is going to put out the fire. Who said that that's mutter? Rashi says, Maybe Rabbi Yossi is right. Maybe you're not allowed to use kelim chadashim because the water is going to come out and it's going to put out the fire. And Rabbi Yossi says that's gram kibui. You're not allowed to do it. So Rav is still not out of the woods. Everybody following, or are there any questions? We're good. Okay. So the Gemara says, gram kibui mi amar. Did anybody ever say that you're allowed to do gram kibui? In midekatani seifa Rabbi Yossi osa b'li chares chadashim le'yamayim she'inan yucholim mekabal ha'ta'ur v'hin bitbakim v'machabin etatleika michlal detanekama shari. So the Gemara puts the cherry on the top and says, no, there is a machlokes in the Mishnah. There's Rabbi Yossi, who says, like the Tosefta, or like what the Gemara is trying to say, that you're not allowed to put water at the end, because that's going to be gram kibui. But the Tanakama and Rabbi Shimon ben Anas, or I'm not sure if the Tanakama is Rabbi Shimon ben Anas, but the Tanakama, who disagrees with Rabbi Yossi, says, no, you are allowed to put pitchers which will explode and spread the water and put out the fire. Which means that according to the Tanakama of the Mishnah, you are allowed to put water at the end of the line, which will put out the fire. Gram kibui in this situation is mutter. That's what the Mishnah seems to say, and that's what Rav is relying on. Okay? Good? We good? Good. Okay. So now the Gemara continues. Tanu Rabbanan, Nu Braita, Ner Shal Gabe Tavla, Mena'eret HaTavla, V'hinu Felet. V'im Kavta, Kavta. Let's say you have a candle on some kind of platter, okay, on a tavla. So if you want the candle to go out, you know what you could do? You could shake the tavla, you could shake it, which will cause the ner to fall, which sounds like a great idea, by the way. Cause the ner to fall, and then the ner will go out, and then there you go. Now you can go back to sleep, okay? You don't have to worry about the light being on in the room. All right, this is a big chiddush because it means that you're putting out the fire. Now, before going into the issue of the fire itself, there is a separate issue, which those of you who were in the Smichas Chaver program talked about a few years ago. Simon, what is the Gemara concerned with over here in terms of this tavla?
That it's muktzah.
What do you mean you're shaking the tavla? The Gemara says, Amri debei Rabbi Yanai lo shanu ela b'shocheach ava b'miniach nase basis l'davar asur. We must be talking about a situation where the candles was placed on the tavla, of course, on Erev Shabbat. It was lit on Erev Shabbat, but it was done in a haphazard way. The person who did it wasn't thinking and didn't realize that it was going to be there on Shabbat and forgot. And they didn't do it on purpose. They didn't put it there purposely. And because of that, we don't have to worry about it being a basis l'davar asur, the tavla. Because if the person had done it on purpose, then the tavla itself would be completely mukta. It would be a basis ladavar asur. The ner is asur. You're not allowed to move the ner. Everybody can agree with that. And the tavla would be asur to move under any circumstances or under most circumstances. And so it must be that he placed it there just in a haphazard way without thinking. Fine.
This is the famous story of your pencil in the middle minion. On your shtender, remember?
Yes. One time I came into shul at the middle minion, and on my shtender there was a pencil, and I wanted to move the shtender because it wasn't in the place that I wanted it. And so I wondered aloud whether or not I was allowed to move the shtender. The answer was, of course, yes, for many reasons, not the least of which I doubt whoever put the pencil there meant that the pencil should be there on Shabbat. But there were other reasons also why it was okay to move it. But fine. Now, that's one braita. There's another one that says, here, this is a very important one. Tana, ner shacharei hadelet, potech v'noel kedarko. Im kavta, kavta. So they taught that if you have, it's hard to exactly translate the words over here, if you have a candle that is behind, that's what it says, behind the door, you're not allowed to open and close, sorry, it says you are allowed to open and close the door, and if the light goes out, shine, all right, it went out. Layit ala Rav. Rav came, and what does layit ala mean? Anybody know what layit means?
He criticized him?
Yeah, even more. He cursed. He cursed whoever came up with this rule. Rashi says, Al kol amarin ken. Rav said, anybody who gives shir and he teaches this braita, this tosefta, I curse them. So the Gemara says, Rav amar le ravina le ravacha brei de rava, v'armi le ravacha brei de rava le ravashi. My time alayit ala Rav. Why does Rav curse them? What do you have to curse them out for? If you want to say that the reason is because Rav holds like Rav Yehuda, v'tana k'tani like Rabbi Shimon, which Rav Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon are we talking about over here? Because there's a bunch on Shabbos. Which Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon do you think we're talking about over here? There's a machloka between Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon that is...
The famous one. This is the Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Yehuda that argue regarding Mukta. And regarding Dovah Shela Mitkaven is also a Muta.
Right. So this is the Dovah Shela Mitkaven. The other famous one, of course, is Melacha Shein Shricha Legufa. But this is Dovah Shela Mitkaven. And what's happening is that the Gemara is saying maybe Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda that Dovah Shela Mitkaven is Aser. And if he holds like Rabbi Yehuda that Dovah Shela Mitkaven is Aser, then that's why he's very upset about this. But maybe the Tanakama, the Tana that taught this, holds like Rabbi Shimon, that it's mutter. And how does Rav curse out the person who's teaching this? Seder, they follow different positions, but he doesn't have to curse him. If it's because Rav holds like Rabbi Yehuda, the Tanak Tani like Rabbi Shimon, Mishum the Rav Savar like Rabbi Yehuda, called the Tanak Rabbi Shimon, Melet Layet La. What, you're going to curse out? Is every Sephardi Posek going to curse out every Ashkenazi Posek? If every Ashkenazi Posek going to curse out every Sephardi Posek? There's something wrong with my microphone, I apologize. So, why is Rav cursing? So the Gemara says, "Amalei baha afila Rabbi Shimon moda." No, the reason is because here even Rabbi Shimon agrees that you're not allowed to open and close the door. In other words, Rav curses him out because he says nobody says that you're allowed to open and close this door. It's striking, just to make it a point, that Rav doesn't just say, "Oh, he's wrong." He curses him. Does that make it worse or better?
Which perspective?
What do you say, Mike?
From which perspective? Worse or better from?
I mean, you know, Rav could have said, no, this Tana is wrong and it's really Asur. But he didn't. He said, I curse him. So does that mean is Rav saying, I'll give you two options. Rav could be saying, it's really usher, and people get this wrong, and we have to curse anybody who teaches this. Or Rav could be saying, listen, technically it's mutter, but it's really close to being usher, and so we shouldn't teach people that they're allowed to do this.
Seems like the former.
Okay, fine. I'll tell you where else this comes up. The Torah says, this is completely off the beaten path, but it just reminds me. The Torah says, midvar sheker tirchak. Right? The Torah says that. Midvar sheker tirchak. Is it usher to lie? According to the Torah? Is there a mitzvah that you're not allowed to lie based on this pasuk? So the Rishonim actually argue. Some say, of course, midvar sheker tirchak means you have to stay far, far away. It's even more usher than usher. It doesn't just say al tishaker, it says midvar sheker tirchak. But other Rishonim say, no, it's saying that as a value, you should try not to lie. If it really wanted you not to lie, it would have said, al tishaker. So it's kind of similar to this diyun over here with Rav. It's not exactly clear whether Rav is saying it's technically usur or whether he's saying it's really not good, but not technically usur, so we should really discourage people from doing it.
Well, it's maybe because some shkarim might be permissible.
That's true, but we have ways of, we would have come up with that anyways, I think. You might be right, but we would have come up with that anyways. No, we have all kinds of isurim that we sometimes are allowed to do.
That's why somebody said that it would have been wise by Kadosh Baruch Hu to say, instead of lo tirtzach, yesh omrim shelo tirtzach, yesh omrim shelo tignob. All people would have kept that very, yes. Very strictly.
It's the famous story about the Sif Katan in the Mishnah Brura being more convincing than lo tignovu. You know that story in the yeshiva. There's a boy in the yeshiva who used to buy milk, and he put it into the fridge, and every day came, and he saw that somebody was drinking his milk. So he wrote on the carton of milk his name, and he came back the next day. People were still stealing. Then he wrote on it lo tignovu, and he came back the next day, and people were still stealing it. And then he wrote on it chalav stam, and he came back the next day, and nobody touched it. Right. So yeah. So that this is what Rav says. Now, Rav seems to be saying that even Rabbi Shimon says that in this case, it's a psik resha. This is what this is where you jump in and say, oh, even Rabbi Shimon agrees that when it's a psik resha, what's a psik resha? So the difference between a psik resha and a regular darshin mitkaven is that both of them have in common that when you do action A, you don't intend for the resulting malacha B. Both Dovrshin Mitkaven and Psik Reisha are that way. The only difference is that in
Psik Reisha is something that has an inevitable outcome.
That's right. So Dovrshin Mitkaven is, by the way, is the superset. Psik Reisha is a Dovrshin Mitkaven. It's the same Suk. It's just that it's a very specific type of Dovrshin Mitkaven in that, like my father said, it is to a certain degree inevitable that it's going to happen. So in this case, what Rav seems to be saying is that in this case, even Rabbi Shimon would agree that this candle that's behind the door, when you open and close the door, it is definitely going to go out, or at least sufficiently definitely.
Why to a certain degree?
Well, how certain is it that it's going to go out is the question. That's something that the Maharsha deals
with. Sikresha, but like almost, you're going to chop the head off a chicken, it's not going to die. Right, it's 100% going to happen.
So this is clearly not that. This is clearly not that. Not every time you open and close the door is the candle going to go out.
If there's no wind or sun, the candle won't go out.
Oh, so hold on. So the good
then
point.
Then it's not a psik resha.
But the Gemara says that it is, and the Gemara does not distinguish between the wind because we didn't get there yet. Let me finish the Gemara, and then we'll go back to the sources, and we'll be able to figure this out. See, take a look. Afilo Rishim Moded, Daha Abaye V'Rav Adami Chavaya Moded Rav Rishim Psik Resha V'lo Yamot. Amar of Yehuda, potech adam delet keneged medura b'shabbat. A similar but different case. This says, let's say you had a medura, you had some kind of bonfire going. I don't know why you have a bonfire inside your house, but fine. You have some kind of bonfire going, and then you open the door on Shabbat. So, layit ala Abaye. So this time Abaye is the one who starts cursing. So Abaye said you're not allowed to, you shouldn't open the door. B'may eskinan. Ilema beruch metzuya, maitaime demanda asar. If you're talking about a regular wind is not going to put out this medura. So what are you worried about? You shouldn't be usher. If it's a hurricane winds outside, my time in demand shari, why would anybody allow this? Rather, we're talking about a case where it is a ruach metzuya, and everybody agrees that in this specific case, the fire is not going to go out because it's a medura, but the rabbis made Abaye claims that the rabbis made an gzeira because people won't be able to distinguish between a big wind, a strong wind, and a non-strong wind. So in any of these cases, you're not allowed to open the door. Okay. So that's where we are for the Gemara. Anybody want to raise any issues before we start the sources?
Do we want to mention the nafkamina, the grammar, and the psik resha together?
We will. All right, so let's get started. All right. So we're talking about mikrei katze. It should really be mikrei. It's plural. Mikrei katze shel psik reisha on Shabbat. So the first one, this should be al gabe ner al gabe hatavla. Can everybody see my screen? Just making sure.
Yeah.
Good. So the.
Rabbi, are you video recording this or just sound recording this?
No, I'm just audio recording it. But the sources will be, you know, next to the recording on the website on Wayu Torah. You can always download the sources. So, I mean, the truth is that it does video record automatically. There's no way to only audio record, but I only upload the audio.
I'm just going to say I'm having a big internet problem. I'm going to shut it and sign off. So don't be insulted if I'm off. I'm going to try and get on my phone. And if not, I'll listen to it on the recording.
Okay, that's fine. All right. Good night, Dad. Hopefully you'll see you soon. So Chidush HaRashba. Okay, we're going to see actually three Rashbas tonight. The Rashba is going to take center stage tonight. Rav Shlomo ben Aderet, the great, great Sfardi Posek, Talmud of the Ramban, or at least from his school. One of the most important halachic authorities, one of the most quoted tshuva svarim in Shulchan Aruch. So we're going to see three Rashbas tonight from his chidushim, though. So the Rashba says, "Hadatane ner shagabi atavla menerat atavla v'hino felat v'im kavta kavta." Right? We saw this case where the candle was on top of the tray. You push the tray, and the candle falls and it goes out. V'ukimna dafka b'shocheach. The Gemara establishes this is Dafka talking about where you put it there by accident. You put it there and you forgot that Shabbos was coming. He says, "I don't understand. When you push the candle off of the tray, when you push it off, what happens? The shemen comes out of the ner, and you're going to be mechabeh." There is no way that even if the candle doesn't go out, you're at least going to cause some of the shemen from the lamp. Keep in mind that they didn't have, you know, flashlights. They had a lamp which had shemen inside and a ptil coming out of it. So when it falls on the floor, even if the candle doesn't go out completely, even if the ptil doesn't go out completely, some of the shemen will splash out, and now there's less shemen in the lamp. It's going to be lit for less time. That is considered mechabe. If you remove some of the shemen from a lamp, that's kibui. So the Rashba says, how are you going to get around this? How can we get around this? So he quotes two answers. One answer is not his. L'divrei Baal Ha'aruch shekatavnu lamala. This is the most famous shita of the Aruch. Simon, what's the most famous shita of the Aruch? We're about to see it.
Hello there, sorry.
So here it is. The most famous shita of the Aruch in all of Shas. The pirish delo modu Rabbi Shimon b'psik reisha delo nichalei. The Aruch invented, well, he didn't invent, but he championed the cause of the heter of psik resha delo nichalei. What's psik resha delo nichalei? Imagine a regular psik resha where you do action A and it results in action B, in malacha B, except malacha B you have absolutely no interest in. It doesn't benefit you at all. In some versions, maybe it even is against your wishes. And so you're not interested in it at all. Okay? So the Aruch manufacturers might say that this case is talking about where it wasn't what I said before. It wasn't the case that, like, excuse me, that you wanted the light to go out, and that's why you were shaking the tavla. No, you wanted the tavla. You wanted to use the tavla. So you shook the ner off, and then you're going to take the tavla and you're going to go do something with it. What happens to the candle is of no interest to you to whatsoever. In fact, it might even be that you want the candle to remain lit and you don't want any of the shemen to go out of it. And so in that case, it's a psik resha delo nichalei and completely mutar. That's what the Aruch says.
I always thought that was the Rashba.
No. That's the Aruch. Aruch in Tosod and Kuf Yod Aleph. But the Rashba's own answer is, he says, V'inami, yesh li lomar, b'ner shel shava. He says, no, we're talking about a wax candle. The wax candle, if it falls on the ground, it may remain lit, it may not remain lit, but it's not going to burn for any shorter because it's on the floor than it would have wherever it was before. So the Rashba has another way out. He says, we're not talking about a ner with shemen. Okay, so those are the two answers the Rashba gives. Now the Radbaz gives a he gives us the whole range of answers over here. All right, Rav David ben Zimri, he gives several different answers, including his own chiddush. He quotes Tosfot, which we could have seen on the page. Tosfot says that it's talking about b'she'en shemen baner shi shafech. Tosa just says there's no shemen left. In other words, the ptil is kind of at the end of its wick, right? In other words, there's no shemen left. So you knock it over, and if it goes out, it goes out. It's not gonna you're not gonna be lit for any less time because of the shemen that spills out, because there is no shemen left. But he doesn't buy it. V'dochiku, he says, I don't buy it. That's a really far-fetched way of explaining the Gemara, to assume that we're talking only about a case where there was no shemen left. So he doesn't like that. So he says, there's another answer. Maybe we're talking about an Ershel Shava. This is the answer of the Rashba. But he says, I don't like that answer either. Shaharei, I don't actually totally understand this. Maybe one of you can help me with it. Hagaonim harif v'harambam asru lahadik b'neirot shava b'shabbat. Says the Rambam and the Rif say you're not allowed to light candles, wax candles, I presume Erev Shabbat, for Shabbat. I don't know what he's talking about. Is there an Isra on the books that you're not allowed to light wax candles for Shabbat? The only thing I could think of that he's talking about is that we're assuming that these are Neirot Shabbat, that these are the candles that you're lighting for Kavod Shabbat, the ones that you light by your table. And that the Rambam and the Rif say you're not allowed to use wax candles for that. And he's assuming that we're talking about those Neirot Shabbat, which I'm not sure why he's assuming that. Can anybody come up with anything better? I'm not aware of an Isser of using wax candles on Shabbat.
Sounds like a fair assumption of what you're saying, Rav.
Yeah, I don't know why. Yeah, but I don't know why he's assuming that this Tavla with the Neir on it is Dafka the Neirot Shabbat. Why is he assuming that? Okay, be that as it may.
Wasn't there some issue once with wax candles having non-kosher fats or something? And if we wouldn't want to use them for Kavod Shabbos, I don't know.
But it's not for Kavod. I was assuming that these Neirot are not necessarily for Kavod Shabbos. But Meir, you seem to be saying maybe the Radbaz is assuming that it was for Kavod Shabbos, so that's why you're not allowed to use it. That could be. All right. He keeps going down the line. He says, maybe Rabbi Shimon is moda by a psik resha. Okay, so here he's quoting the Aruch, like the Rashba did. And you know what? He says something funny. He says, these rabbis are so funny. Right? Come on, that's a joke. He says, havanicha, because it's the answer is lo nichale. And he says, this would be a good teretz. And the way he says it, it's havanicha. No? Everybody get it? He's being funny. He's being punny. Anyways, he says, this would be a good answer, im hayadin muskam. Basically, he says, this would be a good answer if the Aruch was right. The problem is, rova poskim lo hiskimu bo. He's probably not right. In other words, the explanation of the Gemara is good if you're the Aruch, but nobody else can give this answer because nobody agrees with him. V'lo shanilu bein inichale ilo nichale. Yehavi psikresha aser. Almost everybody disagrees with the Aruch in principle that this is a blanket heter, psikresha de lo nichale. Finally, he gives one more answer from Tosfot, which he also doesn't like. He says, maybe kavta hashal hevet v'adayin yesh bo gachelet. Maybe we're talking about where the fire is out, but there's still a little bit left in the, I don't even know what he's talking about here, but he says it's dochek. Fine. So what's his answer? So look at his chiddush answer. It's like, it's a very Torah Mada kind of answer. Look at this. He says, I didn't understand what the Gemara was talking about until I went to Mitzrayim and I saw that they sell a very special model of lamp in Mitzrayim. They have a special model where you fill the lamp with shemen, you put the wick in, and then you're able to close the lamp, apparently sealing it, so that even if you were to knock it off of the tavla and it hit the ground, what would not happen?
The oil wouldn't spill.
The shemen would not splash out of the lamp. He says, "Lamati yeshal nekev katan mod kavish yor ptila k'shemini achaptila sotim et nekev moshech min hashemen asher betoch hakli." It's only a small hole. Afilu sheipol hakli lo yishafech hashemen klal. Ubener kazei ukiyote bo ayri shein hashemen ishbach vaday afilu sheipol v'lo amru ella beim kavta kavta abashvichat hashemen lo hiskiro. So it could be that the wick itself might hit the ground at a certain angle so that the fire goes out, but you don't have to worry about any of the shemen leaving. Big chiddush by the Radbaz, and I like the way he kind of, you know, he used the things that he was seeing in the world in order to try to explain the Gemara. Okay. Agav, it doesn't make it into the Shulchan Aruch. His answer does not make it in. So the Shulchan Aruch says himself, Shachach ner ala tavla. Notice that he says Shachach. You forgot that you left the candle on the tavla. You cannot have kavana. You're not allowed to have kavana. This is a key point. You cannot rely on davar sheinu mitkaven if you have kavana. So if you're trying to knock it off in order to make the light go out, not allowed to do that. The Rama adds, v'tov la'asot o'idei eino yehudi, b'makom shein tzarech kol kach. It's better to have a non-Jew do it. He says, the Rama adds in that it has to be a wax candle or that it doesn't have any shemen, those terutzim that the Radbaz didn't like. But the Rama has a different problem. He says it's not that it's going to go out earlier, but actually that it's going to burn even more. He points out that if you leave the candle on the tavla, then you're not allowed to move it at all. And then the Rama adds at the end, you're allowed to touch it because mukta is only, you're not allowed to move it, but you're allowed to touch it. You're allowed to touch a menorah itself. You're just not allowed to move it. Fine. The Mishnah Berurah adds that afilu b'ner shel shemen shari, de'b'makom she'enu mitkaven shari al'idei enu yehudi, afilu hu psik reshe. Okay, so here's mikrei katzeh number one over here. What's mikrei katzeh one over here? What is the big heter that the Mishnah Berurah just revealed to us? New, based on the Maharil?
If it's by a goy, a psik reshe is allowed.
Yafe. The Mishnah Berurah has revealed to us that psik resha al yedei goy is mutter, even if it's an iser d'oraita. Psik resha al yedei goy is mutter. All right.
And makom she'en mitkaven,
where the non-Jew, what happened? You yourself, you want the tavla, all right? You want the tavla, so you have to knock off the candle in order to get to the tavla, but you're not allowed to do that because it might do something to the ner, because there's shemen in there, right? So what do? You ask the non-Jew to tilt it over so that you can take it. Both of you don't have kavanah to put out the fire, right? But it's definitely going to happen. All right? Okay. Good. All right, let's skip this bir halacha. Not interesting to us right now. Ner shachar hadelet. Okay, what's the story with this, with the candle that's behind the door? So first we have to figure out what the case actually is. So Pirish Rashi, the Rashba, quotes, im kavta baruach kavta. If the fire goes out because of the ruach, it goes out. V'hikshu alav betosvot im kain, my noel. Tosfot doesn't like this. Because Rashi is assuming that what happened, you open the door, the air, the wind comes in and puts out the fire, okay? But Tosfot asks, what did the Gemara say? Poteach v'noel. What does noel mean? It means you're closing. But why should noel be a problem? If we're worried about the wind coming in, when you close the door, the wind's not going to come in. So why does it mention noel? You hear Tosfot's question? Does everybody hear Tosas' question on Rashi? Rashi is the simplest way to read the Gemara, but it doesn't make any sense, because why does it say Noel? So Tosas's answer is, Ein akushya lefidati de Noel lav davka, umishum poteach nakad la, v'orcha de milkad nakad, k'famer eno nimna miliftach v'noel kedarko. Tosas saves Rashi and says, yeah, it just, the Gemara just means you can't open and close the door. It's just a way of speaking. It doesn't mean that there's a problem with closing the door. It's just that once it's talking about opening, so it mentions closing. It's speaking the way normal people would speak. The rabbi said, you can't open and close the door. Fine. That's a way to defend Rashi. He says, others say that we're not talking about where the candle is behind the delet. What are we talking about?
Candles on the wall.
The candle's on the delet. It's on top of the delet, right? And when you open the delet and when you close the delet, it doesn't matter which way you go. What's going to happen to the nair?
It's going to blow out.
Well, it's going to fall off the door and it's going to go out because it's on top of the door. The movement, it doesn't matter. And it doesn't matter whether you're opening it or whether you're closing it. Both things are asur.
Are you talking about literally resting on the top of the door?
Yes.
Or attached to the wall above the door?
I don't think it's attached to the wall above the door. It doesn't seem to be.
I can't fathom anybody putting a candle resting on the top of a door. It's beyond my imagination.
Okay, fine. Maybe it's on top of something that the door is going to bang into when you open and close it. Maybe.
When I was in high school, we used to rest a glass of water on the top of the door. And when the teacher came in and opened the door, the water splashed on her. That was a trick. But we wouldn't do it with a fire. We weren't that bad.
If the candle was just like above the door on the doorpost, then the opening and closing of the door, the wind of that might blow it out. It would make more sense than balancing it and doing the water trick.
What are you saying, Mike? That it would be on top?
If the candle's like on the top of the lintel to give light, but then right. The closing and opening of the door, the wind of that motion could blow it out.
It would. I don't think it's just that it's blowing out. It's falling. But you're making a good point. Maybe it's on like on top of. I don't know how the doors were made, but maybe it's on the top of the door frame, and then the opening and closing of the door shakes the door frame and causes the candle to fall. That's possible.
But also both the opening and the closing of the door creates an air wave. Even if the candle is close to the door, the opening without any wind, mere opening and closing, the movement creates a movement of air which might put out the light.
Yafet Pinchas, you're mechaven to the Rivash and his defense of Rashi, which we're going to see. You know, let's see it right now since you brought it up. The Rivash doesn't like what Tosfot did to Rashi. The Rivash says nearly Shirashi Shapir Shapsik Resha Husharuach Mechabe. Rashi assumes that it's the wind that's putting it out. Lo Buracha Nichnas Derecha Petach Kamar. He's not talking about the wind that's coming in. Because it should have just mentioned that you're not allowed to open up a door in front of the Nair, and if it goes out. Remember what the end of the Gemara says. It gives a different case with the Medura, and it only mentions opening the door. And it should have mentioned the Ruach Metzuya and the Ruach She'ena Metzuya, like you guys brought up before, but it doesn't mention that over here. Rashi's talking about the wind that's created by the opening of the door. The door itself is the fan that's going to put out the candle. And that would happen both when it's opened and when it's closed. So that's how the Rivash understands Rashi, which is different than the way that the Rashba understood it. Now, I want to go back to just finish the Rashba. I'm not sure that we're right about the lintel case, though. I think it's literally on top of the door, and I'll show you why. Because the Rashba says, Mishum basis leka, di'ikalameim rabishocheach, v'inami she'in hadelet b'teila lagabe haner lioto basiso. Because the Rashba is concerned, he says, but how can I explain this? Because after all, if the candle is on top of the door, then you shouldn't be allowed to move the door because the door itself would become a basis ladavar asur. Mm-hmm. Now he says, we're not concerned for that because the door is actually, is not batel to the ner, for a few reasons. There are other reasons given in the, I think it's in the Achronim, where, for example, the door is actually part of the house, or because it's connected to the ground, so it cannot become muktzah. But one way or another, it certainly sounds from the Rashba like the nair is resting on the door itself. It certainly sounds like it. Does everybody agree with me that it sounds like it, even though we would like him to be saying something else? Okay, fine. Now, the Rashba doesn't like either of these perushim. The shnei perushim ha'elu kasheli. Because he's not convinced that this reaches the level of psik reishe. In either case, in one case, the candle just falls. In the other case, all you did was open the door and maybe a wind comes in and blows it out. Is that really a psik reishe? That it's really going to happen? So he prefers the explanation of Rabbeinu Hanano, who says shaner kavua bakotel acharei hadelet ubiptichato yichavenu. Sounds like what he's saying is that the door itself will actually hit the light, right? That's what it certainly sounds. The hit with a candle and will automatically put it out mechanically, like it will physically hit the candle. That's what it sounds like according to Rabbeinu Hanano, and that's what the Rashba prefers. In which case, it will put it out every single time. But you see that all these different explanations. All right, now this brings us to the last sugya that I wanted to do tonight, and the third Rashba of the night. Psik reisha v'derabanan. All right, this is what's going to take us till the end. So the Rashba says about this last part. He says, "Umikol makom shamin miha." From this whole sugya, we learn. How does he learn from this that psik reisha applies even to a derabanan? Aren't we talking about daraisas here? We're talking about a candle and fire, lighting fires, putting out fires. This is a psik reisha on a daraita, isn't it? So the answer is that it's not necessarily a psik reisha on a daraita. Tahahacha einu mitkaven umalacha shein etzricha legufahi. Vafilo achi amen edemod Rabbi Shimon b'psik reisha hu. Malacha shein etzricha legufahi, which I think we referenced last time, is the second most famous, or you know, top two most famous machloket between Rabbi Shimon and Rabbi Huda, where Rabbi Shimon says a malacha shein etzricha legufahi is pater midaraita v'asar midarabanan on Shabbat. And Rabbi Yehuda says, is asur midoraita. What's a malacha shein tzrich legufa? It's when you do a malacha, the simplest explanation, when you do a malacha for a purpose other than the purpose in the Mishkan. What was the purpose of kibui in the Mishkan? Why did they put out fires in the Mishkan? Irony is, they put out fires in the Mishkan in order to relight them. They would have these coals, and their real purpose was that they wanted to light the coals on fire so that the coals should be on fire. But in order to prepare them so that they would be lit very well, is they would light them once, put them out, and then light them again. Because the pacham, the coal, would be lit easier when it had already been singed, basically. This is the minhag of many women who, when they light their candles on Shabbos, they light them, put them out, and then light them again. Now, what that means is that the original purpose of kibui on Shabbos is for the sake of lighting, which means 99% of the time a person would put out a light on Shabbat, it's only a malacha shein etzrich legufa, which according to Rabbi Shimon is only asur midarabanan. It's quite amazing. 99% of the time that a person would want to put out a fire, it's only a malacha shein etzrich legufa. And over here, it certainly is as well. When he wants to put out the fire, it's only going to be, at best, a malacha shein etzrich legufa, because he certainly doesn't want to put it out in order to relight it. So the Rashba says, you see from this whole sugya, since we're concerned for a psik reishe, which is a davar shein mitkaven, which is definitely going to happen, but it's on an action which is only going to be a malacha shein tzrich legufa, we learn that a psik reisha on a derabanan is still aser. Okay, that's what the Rashba gleans from here. Who disagrees? The Trumat HaDeshen. The Trumat HaDeshen, Rav Yisrael Isserlein, also one of the most important poskim of that era, right? Basically a 14th century Ashkenazi posek, who I actually went through almost all of the tshuvas written by the Trumat HaDeshen this past year and a half, because he's almost every single tshuva he wrote is quoted in Shulchan Aruch or in the Ramah. Almost every single tshuva. And he almost always wins, which is pretty amazing. So over here, in this case, he both wins and loses. We'll see why. The specific question that the Trumas HaDeshen is dealing with is Sachin Sakina Tachuv Bekotel Shel Eitz Mi Ba'od Yom O Taka'o B'Safsal O B'Daf Sheina Mechubarim Shari Lehotzi HaSakin B'Shabbat O Lo. I'll translate, but I think I'm still going to need your help to figure out what exactly is the problem here. Imagine you had a knife that was stuck in a wooden wall or in some kind of wooden utensil, and you want to know if you're allowed to take the knife out on Shabbat. What's the problem? Why should you not be allowed to take it out? Anybody know? What could be the problem?
Because before Shabbat, you never thought you could use it, so wasn't prepared before Shabbat.
Does it make a difference whether I need the knife or the utensil itself?
No. And Mayor, you're assuming that if I did know before Shabbat, maybe I put the knife in the wall because I knew that I wanted it on Shabbos. I just wanted it there. Then you're saying that I would be allowed to take it out on Shabbos. The problem is not right. Mukta. The problem is not Mukta. The problem is an Isser Derabanan of Kodeach, which is that very often when people would build, so they would make holes in the thing that they were building, right? In the cleat that they were building, they would drill holes using a knife. And the problem is that over here, as you're taking the knife out, you're going to have to kind of jiggle it back and forth, which is going to increase the size of the hole as you're taking it out. And there's an Isser Derabanan that it looks like Kodeach, which is like, I don't know if it's chiseling or drilling or something like that. I think it's drilling.
I think it's part of Bona.
Yeah, it is part. It's an Isser of Bona. But the specific thing is Kodeach, which I think is drilling, which is the specific Isser. And even though that's not what you're doing, there's an Isser Derabanan of pulling it out because it looks like you're going to be, it looks like Kodeach. So the Trumas HaDeshen says, well, maybe there's a separate problem. Mechayev Mishum de Metaken Pitcha. Maybe you're really doing something. You're Metaken. He says, no, that's not a problem, because you're not going to be putting things in out of the petach, it's not a problem. That's the specific problem. It's an Isser Derabanan. And then he says, Ulahachi, kamechavin lahosif Isser. So if your intention is to increase the petach, it's going to be aser. Aval b'she'ein mitkaven, nuchal omar afilu ipsikreishahu shari, de be'iser derabanan yesh lechalek ben mitkaven gomor lepsikreishah. Kediyiza b'tshuvas ma'aram says, over here in this case, it's not going to be a problem of psikreishah because it's only aser midderabanan. So he says, I'm not concerned for the fact that you're inevitably going to be doing Kodeach, because it's only going to be an Isser Derabanan at worst.
I didn't understand that those words. Yesh lachalek ben miskavin gomor lepsik reisha. Why would you want to? Isn't it obvious? Miskavin gomor is a complete aser.
Miskavin gomor is aser, and psik reisha, if it was daraita, would also be aser. But for a Derabanan, it's mutter.
So why is it being compared to Chalek ben Miskavi?
No, it says, with it, when it comes to an Isser Derabanan, we have to be Chalek between when you completely intend versus when you don't intend, even if it's a Psik Reisha. Even if it's a Psik Reisha, when an Isser Derabanan, the Trumas HaDeshen paskins that it's completely mutar.
By the way, the point with the knife in the wall, Yeah. The reason why it's only the Rabbanan is because it's only, it's not a hole all the way through. It's the same way with the Tana got it.
Well, yeah. Well, in this case, the reason why
for a hole to be up,
it has to be able to actually trying to build.
I don't think so. But the reason is that she'ena osu la'aknis la'hotzi. When you put a knife in, it's not la'aknis la'hotzi. It's just a dent.
Okay.
Not a hole all the way through. Therefore, it's the Rabbanan.
Yeah, that's true.
Basically, the hole was created when the knife was put in.
Right. But you're being marchiv, you're increasing the hole. But as Simon said, it's not for putting things in and out. So the only problem with making a hole when you're actually putting things in and out. Now what's interesting is the source that the Truma Sadeshin quotes is this Maharam, which I tried to actually track it down. It's hard to track down, but it seems like the case that the Maharam is talking about is where it's a funny case, where somebody built a bathroom, a toilet high up on a building. And when people go to the bathroom, what happens is that the product leaves the toilet, slides its way down the side, and then ends up falling into a Carmelite. So what you've basically done is you've moved it from a Reshut HaYachid to a Carmelite, which is a Durabanan Reshut HaRabim. And the Maharam says it's fine. He says it's fine, there's no problem, because when the person goes to the bathroom, he's not intending to do hotza'ah. That's not his intention. Even though it's definitely going to happen, it's for sure going to happen, it's fine, because it's only Durabanan. That's how the Truma Sadeshin learns. All right?
I think so, the reason that it's allowed is because it's a grammar and a psikresha.
It is
because
also...
because it's a grammar and a psikresha.
Yeah, so one could say that.
Why would it be Durabanan?
Why would it be Durabanan? Because it's a Carmelite.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
It's Mike, what do you think? Which I would not dare to have said if yesterday's daf hadn't said it.
So I didn't hear what you said, Mike.
I said, unless he was feeding his dog, which I would dare not to have said, but yesterday's daf did mention it.
Oh, what, with feces?
Yeah.
Really? Oh,
yeah.
I remember that. It reminds me actually of two things. Number one, if you ever saw the movie Slumdog Millionaire, where they actually have outhouses in India, which, by the way, I confirmed with a former colleague of mine, Waman, great guy, and he said to this day they still have these outhouses like that go directly into the water, into like these water sources where people are literally defecating into the water sources. It's terrible. But also, this Lahavdil, I remember we learned once in Grus, there's a very important tshuva by, I think, Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank in Haaretz Tzvi, where he talks about, and you have kibbutzim, where their bathrooms, the water from the bathroom, the way that the pipes work is that the pipes go down into the ground, but then where do they come out? They come out in the fields. And they pretty much do this on purpose so that the water and the byproduct, right, fertilizes the fields. So the question was that Rav Tzvi Pesach Frank was asked is, can you go to the bathroom on Shabbat? Because when you flush, you're basically fertilizing the field. And
the Shabbat, what about Shmitzer? The whole Shmitzer year, you can't go to the toilet.
It's a good point. So there's you know, as Simon pointed out, there is a grumma aspect to it, because you know it takes a while for it to get there. Which is definitely important over there. But either way, be that as it may, this Truma Tadeshin is held up as being the way of saying that it's mutter to do a psik resha on a durabanan. Now, how is the Truma Tadeshin going to deal with our Gemara? So you can find the answer to that actually in several sources, and they pretty much all say the same thing. So we're actually going to go backwards. We'll go first to the future. The Shud Shol HaMeshiv is Ashal Nathanson. So he says, how am I going to explain the Truma Tadeshin? And over here you have some funny Rashi Teva. It says, Umasha Katuv Kvod Torato Ha something, I forget exactly what that is, Lahakshot Al HaTruma Tadeshin. So these are the same, you have, he calls him Tafhei, and he's asking a question on Tafhei. It just ends up being funny. Anyways, he says, he quotes the Simon Samachai, Dehiter Psikresha B'durabanan. And he says, what are you going to do with our Gemara, Ner Shachar Hedelet? And he quotes the Magen Avraham as asking this question. So he says, Ube'emet Yesh Liyashiv, the Shamach, the Be'emet Yesh Bazeh isur Torah, kshaya malach hatzricha legufa, ulekach af shekait malach sheitzer legufa, hu gazru atu im haya malach hatzricha legufa, mashenkin b'shut rabbanan mamash. In other words, Rav Shaul Nathanson is saying that the Trumat Hadeshen might actually agree with the Rashba about the specific case in our Gemara with the candles. Why? Because what makes it only Asur Midirabanan? What makes the candle case only Asur Midirabanan? Why isn't it Asur Midaraita, as we said before? What makes the putting out of the candle Midirabanan? Why isn't it Daraita? No? It's because it's a Malacha Sheina Tzrich Legufa. Otherwise, the kibui would be Asur Midaraita. Normally, kibui should be Asur Daraita. It's one of the 39 Malachot. But in this specific case, and in most cases, it's a Malacha Sheina Tzrich Legufa. So, the Sholem Eshiv says, since people are going to basically be Mizalzel, right? I should rephrase that. Since you're actually doing the Malacha of kibui, it's just that what dropped it down to Durabanan is just the fact that it's a Malacha Shein Tzrich Legufa. It's kind of like a super Durabanan. It's like a souped up Durabanan. It's like nearly Doraita. And because it's nearly Doraita, there the rabbis say, Psik Reisha is going to apply. And the Rav Shaul Nathanson says, I claim that's what the Trumat Hadeshen would say. What's interesting is that none other than the Me'iri, and I'm not an expert in these things. I don't know what the Sholem Meshiv had in front of him, but we do know that the Me'iri was lost for many years. The Me'iri was one of the great Rishonim, but his the manuscripts were lost for many years, so most of the Achronim had no access to the Me'iri. They didn't know about it. But the Me'iri says, V'yesh mosifim lomar shelo asru psik reisha af benichalei, ela b'chashash iser she'ilu haya oseo b'kavana haya bo iser Torah, muter. Basically, Meiri says the same thing as the Trumat Hadeshen, that a Durabanan psik reisha is muter even if it's nichale. He says, what about our Gemara? Helenu bashu aser, kamoshi yidbarasham, v'avabishenu mitkaben, ubisad psik reisha, v'hari akibwe midivrei sofrim hu, hoil veinu tzarech legufo, afshar hoil v'lifamim hu minatora, says because the kibui is usually considered a daraita, it's just that when it's a malacha shenis legufa, it's derabanan. That's why the rabbis were machmir. But in general, they're makil on psik reisha on a derabanan. So I noticed that the Sholem Eshiv didn't quote the Meiri. It's possible it's because he didn't see it. But the Meiri basically says the same thing as the Sholem Eshiv. That the Gemara that's talking about the Ner, Malacha Sheinu Tzrich Legufa, is a special case. But in every other case of Psik Reisha on the Derabanan, it's going to be Mutter. So the Meiri and the Trumat Hadeshen may be saying the same thing. Now the Ritva also supplies this possibility that really Ben Isser Derabanan on a Psik Reisha is going to be Mutter. But we'll skip that for now. What comes down the halacha? So this comes up in a few places. Number one, this is one exciting place that it comes up. The Rama quotes, "Asur l'shaber uga shekatav aleha kamin otiot." You're not allowed to. What's this? What's this talking about? Talking about the birthday cake, right? You're not allowed to break a cake where there was writing on the cake. Okay. Av b'sheinu mechavin rak la'achila davi mochik. Even though you're cutting it just to eat it, it's considered mechika. That's how the Rama paskins. The Magen Avraham disagrees, and he says there are many that are noeg lahatir, and they say davka kshekotvim alugot otiot midavar acher, avak shaktiva yimayugat sma betfus o biyadaim shari, lachein oklim haugot sheyesh aleim tirim. There are many people who say that this is technically mutter in most cases, because in most cases, the writing is made out of the cake. The only time it's asur, I shouldn't have said in most cases, actually. In most cases, it would be asur, because in most cases, they write in frosting, right? And the frosting is not cake. So in cases where it's made out of frosting, that's a problem. But in cases where it's not made out of frosting, it's not a problem. The Dago Mervava. Who is the Dago Mervava? Who knows? The Dago Mervava is the same person as the Nodi Biyuda, who is the same person as the Tzlach, Rav Yecheskel Landau. I always have to mention that he never wrote a Sefer that had Yecheskel in it. He wrote a Sefer called the Nodi Biyuda. He wrote a Sefer called the Tzlach, which is Tzion the Nefesh Chaya, which is, I think, his mother. And he wrote the Dago Mervava, which, as far as I can tell, is just a phrase from Shir Shirim. But he never wrote Yecheskel, which is interesting. So he's talking about this, and he says, let me find the important parts. 1 second. Here. Vodnir alani adaiti. Lomi baya the Trumatadeshan Shehavi Amagan Avram the Beisr Durabana Mutar Psikresh. He says the Trumatadeshan would have no problem with this. Because what are you doing when you cut the cake? Are you intending to destroy the writing? No, of course not. Imke Mochik Zed Lava Manat Lichtov. The Mechika has the same nature as Kibui. What was the purpose of Mechika in the Mishkan? Why would you erase in the Mishkan? No? Take a guess.
To be able to write on it again.
Exactly. Exactly. Mechika is only Mechika Daraita when you're erasing in order to write. So he says, if you're going to be erasing the cake, is anybody planning on writing on the cake afterwards? No, of course not. So it's Malach HaShem Yisrich Legufa, which means it's only Dirabanan. V'keven She'enu Mitkaven Mutter. And even though it's a psikresha, of course, it's Mutter. But he says, the Magen Avraham disagrees with the Trumat Deshen. But he says, I think even the Magen Avraham would agree that over here, Sha'afilu B'Esar Darabanan Asar B'Sikresha, the Magen Avraham disagrees in general with the Trumat Deshen. Mikom Makom Harehechid Einu Mitkaven U'Mikalkel. It's Einu Mitkaven and it's destructive. Osa Kilachar Yad. And you're doing it in an unnatural way. This is not a normal way of doing Mechika. It's not like you're taking the knife and wiping away the frosting. You're not doing that. You're taking a knife and you're cutting a cake. That's not a normal way of doing mochik. When we call shekain kan de kulo itnu mekalkal hu begam lacharya dein derech mechika bekach. When we call shekain imenu shover biyado rak befiv derech achilato. And for sure, if you were just eating it, although this I think everybody agrees on, that if you eat an Oreo cookie, thereby breaking the word Oreo, I think everybody agrees that that's okay. So he says basically he doesn't think
the same apply if I'm tearing the label on. Might the same apply if I'm tearing the label on a food wrapper and I'm tearing the words on the label?
Right. So I think the tendency is not to be makel on that, although you're asking a good question, why? Why should it be different than cutting a cake?
Rav Melamed says it's fine.
Rav Melamed said it's completely fine to cut the wrapper. All right. I don't think that's the mainstream opinion.
I didn't hear who it is. That is completely fine.
The Pnine Halacha, Rav Melamed. I'm sure there's going to be a lot in the footnotes over there because I don't think that's the mainstream opinion, although it's a good point. Can you guys still hear me? I just messed with the volume.
Yeah, I can hear you. Lost you for a second, but it's back.
Okay.
Yes.
So it sounds like, according to the Dago Mervava, it's completely fine to eat the cake. Why the wrappers would be different? Tzarech Ian, Mike says that the Rav Lamed says that it's fine. That's a good question. Okay. So, but you'll notice that the Dago Mervava brings up the Trumat HaDeshen. His interpretation of the Trumat HaDeshen, however, would not jive well with the Meiri or the Shalom Eishiv. Because the Shalom Eishiv and the Meiri said that the Trumat HaDeshen would only work if the Durabanan aspect was not Melacha Sheinu Tzrich Legufa. Because it's basically the same thing as the Ner case, right? If the Ner case is, according to the Shalom Eishiv, the Trumat HaDeshen would be Machmir on the Ner case because it's a super Durabanan, then he should also be Machmir in the cake case because the Mechika is also a super Durabanan. Is my analysis correct? I think it is. Okay. All right. I wanted to do two last things. Okay. Two last things and then we'll be done for the night. The Shulchan Aruch brings up the Sakin case. Okay. Imaya Sakin, sorry, Takua, Be'er Shabbat Bechavit, Mutar Lahotzio, Lachniso, Sharein, Mitkaven, Hosif. Who's he quoting here? The Trumat HaDeshen. Basically, the Shulchan Aruch passing is like the Truma Dedeshim. The Ramah, V'davka shehotiyo gam kein pam achat mi ba'od yom, avayim lo hotiyo mi ba'od yom, asur, da'ave psik reisha da'os ha'nekar v'petach l'chabit. But who disagrees? The Ramah. The Ramah disagrees. Now, it's interesting that he quotes the Truma Tadashin, but leave that aside for a minute. It's not clear whether or not this is a, whether that's a copyist error. The Mishnah Berurah comments and says, on the Shulchan Aruch, he says, what are we talking about? We're talking about a case where the knife was really stuck in the wall. The Shulchan Aruch knows that there's a psik reisha that the hole will be widened. The Shulchan Aruch is quoting the Truma Dedeshin, who says that this is completely mutter. The Rama disagrees with the Truma Tadashin. The Rama says that an Isser Darabanan, you're not allowed to do the Psik Resha. It appears to be that the Shulchan Aruch paskins that it's Mutter, and the Rama paskins that it's Aser. So this would be a difference between Sfardim and Ashkenazim. He says, and the Rama, and he mentions that Ikar Adin, that Psik Resha is Aser even on a Darabanan. One last thing that I wanted to do, by the way, this is the Mishnah Berurah across the board. The Mishnah Berurah basically passes against the Truma Tadashin. One last thing that I wanted to do, there's a very nice sefer that we all used when we were in yeshiva called the Pri Moshe. It's on Shabbos. It's actually quite short. It's quite small, rather, but it's jam-packed with all kinds of good lumdus. Whenever you learn Psik Reshe, you always have to figure out what exactly is the problem with the Psik Reshe. And the most famous presentation of this is actually by Rav Yochanan Wasserman. It's always not always quoted in his name, but basically says, what's the problem with the psik reisha? Psik reisha is if I'm going to do action A and it's going to result for sure in malacha B, so I'm not allowed to do it. Now, what's the problem? So Rav Yochanan Wasserman said that there could be two ways of viewing this. One way of viewing it is that if it's inevitable that malacha B is going to happen, then that means that even if I claim that I have no kavana for malacha B, I'm lying. I can't claim that I have no kavana for malacha B because I know it's going to happen. Now, if I don't know it's going to happen, that's a different story. But if I know it's going to happen, if I know for a fact that when I open the fridge, the light is going to turn on, even if I say afterwards, you know, I really didn't have kavana for the light turning on, I'm lying. Chazal say, you can't do that. The Torah says, since it's a psik reshe, we can't accept that. You have kavana. We force the kavana on you. That's option A. Option B, Rav Yochanan Wasserman says, is that it's not that we force the kavana on you. It's that when action A inevitably leads to malacha B, it's all one maisa. It's one action. You cannot differentiate between opening the fridge and the light turning on. It's all one thing. So the reason you can't claim that you don't have kavana is because it's all one thing. You can't separate between
Rob, A. Sorry, we lost you through this whole thing.
Oh,
yeah, I think.
When was the last thing you heard?
Muted. You're muted.
Oh, I made it back in. Okay. Can everybody hear me?
Yes.
Okay. Where was I?
We more or less lost you for the
Rav Yochanan Wasserman?
Yeah.
Okay. So I'll say it again. So Rav Yochanan Wasserman says as follows. He says, one way of understanding Psik Reshe is that because action A will always lead to Malacha B, you can't claim that you don't have Kavana for Malacha B because you know it's going to happen. We combine the Kavana. We force the Kavana on you. That's one way of understanding it. The other way of understanding it is to say that because action A will inevitably lead to malacha B, it's one action. It's a din in the action itself. It's all one thing. It's not about your da'at. It's all one thing. Opening the door to the fridge is turning on the light. It's the same thing. Those are two ways of understanding it. Okay? Now, why does that matter?
What's the difference?
So the pre-motion says as follows. If we understand it in the first way, that we force the kavana on you, imkain hachinami be surah derabanan haakati kaven hu psik resha imkain ika kavana. We're going to say that we do the same thing even if it's derabanan. Ach inaim de behemet leka kavana eladafilu hachi asur kaven de kalua b'maase she'osa b'zeh ika lememer de chazal she'asur kol zeh rak shemit kaven. However, if we understand it in the second way, then maybe we'll say that if it's not really about kavana, right? Or rather, if we say that the person really didn't have kavana for it, so then Chazal basically are breaking apart the combination of the maisa. And once you don't have kavana, then you know what? It's not going to really be a psik resha anymore. Did everybody follow that, or was it too...
No, what is the practical difference? If I'm opening the refrigerator door and the light goes on, I'm still in violation here, regardless of which shita you follow.
The practical difference is when the psik resha is on a durabanan. So our case, all right? What could be an example of our case? Any case where there's a psik resha on a derabanan, let's say the case with the cake. All right, you're cutting the cake open, thereby doing mechika, but the mechika is only derabanan. So if we assume that the way the psik resha works is that we combine the kavana and we apply the kavana, so then we do the same thing over here, and it should be usur because we're basically saying you have kavana to do mochik. That's going to be usur. However, if we say that no, we acknowledge that you had no kavana to actually do mechika. It's just that the action is combined. So the rabbis may say, on a derabanan, they may say, no, in this case, we're going to allow it. We did not make this isur derabanan apply when we know that the person had no kavana. We acknowledge that the person had no kavana, we're not going to make it apply. Now, the reason why I like this piece so much is that he's so honest. Very often, when you learn Gemara, Be'iyun, and with Lamdus and everything, so you end up with a lot of different shitot, right? And a lot of conceptual shitot. And what sometimes happens is that if you pay careful attention, you'll notice that people switch sides. In other words, I say Rashi holds this way, or Tosfot holds this way, or the Rashba holds this way. But then I ignore the fact that in a different sugya, he holds the exact opposite position if I understand him in that way. Now the pre-Moshe over here says, "Lefize nimtzu dekol shitot satri mishnatam." The problem is that if we apply this rationale over here, they're going to contradict each other because the Rashba switches sides between the different sugyas. I don't want to go into, and the Aruch switches sides between different sugyas. I don't want to go into it because I know it's very, very late. I just wanted to recognize that I respect the pre-Moshe for at least acknowledging that even though we had a very nice idea, it doesn't really fit in to the different shitot of the Rishonim in different places in Shas. I think we're going to stop here because I know that I've gone quite late. So I want to wish everybody a good night. Thank you for listening. And yishar koach.
Very, very nice share. Yishar koach.
Yishar koach, guys. Good night.